When was the last time you considered how much was done for you if you attended public school? You're listening to SDPB's Teacher Talk. It's a podcast for teachers and their BFAWs. That's your best friend at work. It's made by education professionals who love their job. And essentially, it is two teachers and a journalist talking about the highs and sometimes lows of teaching. I'm the journalist, Lori Walsh. We are going to continue our series on Teacher Talk takeaways. This is our third and final installation, and now I get my chance to bring up a few of my favorite moments from more than 80 episodes of recording this podcast with Gina and Jackie. Before we get started, a little bit about our educators. Jackie Wilbur is a faculty member at the University of South Dakota's School of Education, where she serves as director of the Center for Student and Professional Services. And Gina Benz is an adjunct faculty member at several universities. She teaches high school at Roosevelt in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and is a recipient of the prestigious Milken Educator Award. Gina and Jackie sat down with me in the SDPB studios in Sioux Falls. It was so much fun to go through. I wrote down what I thought my takeaways would be without referencing the archive online. And then I referenced the archive online, and I was like, oh, I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. How delightful was that?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start with this one, which is public schools are for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Duh, is what I originally said, and I took out the duh. But I guess what I was trying to get at here is you don't think about it. You two do, because mm-hmm. you're public school teachers, and you've studied the history of public education in America. But for most of us, we just get on the bus one day mm-hmm. and go to school, and we don't think about the options that in other countries, mm-hmm. in other times, that's not available to mm-hmm. everybody.
Yeah. You bring up a good point about other countries. Sometimes our students get compared to students in other countries. Keeping in mind, we educate all. Not all countries educate all.
Yeah. I've learned that from you again and again and again. What sorts of things did you learn, and Jackie, when you're recruiting new teachers as well, that you remind them about the American educational system that is unique?
Yeah, well, I think the very idea that it is for the public, and remembering, I think that was one of the biggest, I don't know if it was like shocking when I first started teaching, but you think you know the public because you go out in public,
yeah.
and your public is different based on what your lifestyle is like, where you go to the grocery store, where your third space is, how you intersect with the world is really curated to your life. And then you become a public school teacher and your eyes do get opened, or at least mine did, to the entirety of the public.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think one thing that happened to me is my like heart broke wide open of just mm. the yeah. vastness of all the things that happen in our society. And so that's one of the things I do talk about with future teachers, is that you do need to be prepared to encounter the public in this way. And that is an incredibly special part of the American education system, that we do educate all. But like I said, it's just it made me kind of take a step back and go, oh, wow, I didn't know the public. I thought I knew who the public yeah. was, but I didn't until I became a teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when your heart breaks wide open, I want to also say that feels like, you know, so much compassion and empathy we have for certain student situations. But also I often say my students wiggle into my heart.
Mm.
And that happens. And it's such a rich experience to get to know so many different people
mm-hmm.
and to learn about all the different ways life can look for different people. It's just one of the most satisfying parts of my career.
Yeah. And it gave me to think about that for a while, to ruminate on that, really increase my gratitude as well.
Yeah.
Realizing the kind of family that I came from, you know, not a lot of money. We didn't necessarily, I won't say my parents didn't value education, but we weren't like a highly educated family who was like, you got to get to college someday. We're sort of the opposite of that. And so the teachers that welcomed me into the classroom and all my other classmates and just mm-hmm. gave me the opportunity, the choices for mm-hmm. my future that I never would have had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's what I like to say. Our job is to give kids more options and opportunities for their lives.
Yeah.
And I pulled this up because I wanted to say this so badly to go with this point, Lori. It is part of Emma Lazarus's poem that is at the base of the Statue of Liberty. I talked about this on an episode this fall where I was kind of an ode to teachers, just appreciating teachers. I'm going to read this again because I think it doesn't just describe our nation. It describes our public schools. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. By my lamp beside the golden door.
Mm. School.
Mm-hmm. The golden door, the lamp.
Yeah. I was in a webinar with the poet and essayist Ross Gay, I think last week or 2 weeks ago, and he was talking about people, you know, criticizing and kind of like separating themselves from their family members, like not wanting to be obligated to their families at all. And he was wondering, I'm going to paraphrase and maybe even misquote him a little bit, but I think the intention of what he was saying was that it sometimes is easier to forget how much we've been helped. Mm. And it can be hard to face up to obligations. You want to deny how much you were helped. And I think that about schools. You know, it's awfully easy to criticize your classroom, your child's teacher. But if you really sit back and think about what your teacher did for you and how much you were helped in public school by your community paying their taxes and those teachers who came and the administrators and the bus drivers, it's overwhelming to know how a community cares for its children. Mm-hmm. And that can be uncomfortable because then you feel a sense of maybe obligation to be supportive of your neighborhood school, even if you don't have kids walking in the door right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think an educated society is hopefully something that we all still value and see the benefits in. But yes, the word you used earlier is gratitude. And that's what I meant when I said my heart breaks wide open when I think about just the fact that this exists at all, because it doesn't have to. That is, we have agreed, yes, we will have yellow school buses, which were started in South Dakota, by the way. Yes.
What?
Yes. We'll have to do another episode on like why they're yellow and how the origin story of that.
That's your assignment.
Yes, that's my assignment. Okay. So anyway, but we will put students on yellow buses and we will have playground equipment and we will have library books and there will be teachers in classrooms and there'll be recess and there'll be free lunch or discounted lunch. Like the fact that we as a society somehow have managed to make all of that happen is genuinely, in my mind, very miraculous and not without criticisms, but I'm just very grateful that it exists at all.
Yeah. Gina, you wrote a post called Homework Favors the Privilege that made me really think about that too. And even reflecting on my own life as a student to say how many times was I up at 2 o'clock in the morning in that high school era, like trying to get my homework done before the next day. And I really always thought that was just me being irresponsible or procrastinating. But when I think about the dynamics of my family and, you know, family dinner and my part-time job and two younger siblings and the noise of the household, we always lived in kind of a small house for, you know, six people. And I'm like, oh, maybe it wasn't all my procrastination. Maybe there were a whole lot of distractions. And that hadn't occurred to me, but I bet it occurred to my teachers when I came in the next day and they saw how tired I was. They were thinking about it.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about that a lot for all of the reasons you just said. My students who are contributing to their family's income, my students who are taking care of their siblings while their parents work, so many things, but also just students who are really busy with great activities that make them a well-rounded person.
Yeah.
Homework can interfere with that.
Yeah. Here's another key takeaway, and that is about the orchid children. And Jackie, you wrote a beautiful post about orchid children based on the research of Dr. Thomas Boyce, saying there are dandelion children who sort of sprout and do well anywhere, come up through the cracks in the sidewalk, and then there's the delicate flowers, which perhaps I was one.
I mean, I feel that with you. I just have to say, reading your entire blog post, but particularly this section, made me think about the times as a teacher when I would read an essay that one of my students had written. Yeah. And it, I'm not exactly sure how I want to say this, Laurie, but what I would like to say to you is that I read this and went, oh, wow, it's so amazing to hear someone say back to you or write back to you what they got out of a conversation. And it gave me the same feeling that I do as an educator when I read an essay that a student has written and you're like, oh, whoa, they like really got a lot out of reading this book or reading that article or having this class discussion. And then you did way more research and thought about it so much more. It gave me a lot of joy. So I just wanted to say thank you. It felt really good to read. So
for people who don't know that story, I think I had told in another conversation we had the story about me being in kindergarten and I was looking as an adult through my scrapbook. Mm-hmm. And there was a note from the kindergarten teacher to my mother who said, oh, the pillow that you sent with little Lori for nap, she didn't want to leave it at school. Perhaps you would maybe like send something less precious to her, but I sent it home with her on the bus. And you immediately picked up on this teacher identifying that the kindergartner at the end of the day was not going to leave her mommy's hand-sewn pillow in the classroom.
Yes.
And that sometimes this teacher was Mrs. Schneff was her name, mm-hmm. Was meeting me exactly where I was.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I never thought of that before.
You obviously had a great teacher. It was like beautiful, beautiful moment in your educational upbringing, and I'm glad you shared it with us. But it did make me think of this concept, which is that there are orchid children, which are fairly rare, just like in society or in floral society, I guess, in flowers, where they just are. They need circumstances to be a very particular way in order to grow. Whereas dandelions, they can kind of come up from the cracks and be in all, they'll be fine no matter what. And there's a lot of children who are dandelion children. That's the vast majority of them, pretty hardy and can kind of survive in all of these unique situations. But orchids really need very particular situations. And then I don't know if we talked about it on the episode, but later you and I had a conversation, Laurie, where you had done more research about orchids.
Yeah.
And that they also can grow in very, very tough climates where it's like...
Yeah.
Dandelions probably wouldn't even grow. So mm-hmm. it's not necessarily that they're fragile, but it just needs to be very specific and to the plant.
Yeah.
So
anyway. And then I looked up more information on orchids and talked about how they're so important to the ecosystem in which they're in.
Yes.
Which I also found, revealing the sense that it's not just this delicate thing that everyone is carrying around, mm-hmm. Protecting, but that is part of the ecosystem. And if the orchids are doing well in an ecosystem, the rest of the ecosystem is probably doing well too. And I thought, well, isn't that what we want in our communities?
Yes.
We want strong, resilient people, but we also want to take care of, in certain ways, the more vulnerable among us,
mm-hmm.
even the emotionally vulnerable children among us.
Can I read what you wrote?
Yeah.
You wrote, if your most sensitive students are thriving right alongside your resilient dandelion children, your classroom is having a good moment. And mm-hmm. maybe that's true for communities too.
Mm-hmm.
I loved reading this.
Yeah. We all impact each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I would like to also add that I like how you said it's not that they're delicate or fragile,
mm-hmm.
because that's something teachers are really working hard with nowadays. Let me say it this way. We're trying to help students gain strategies so that they can function well in the environments they're placed in. We're not just saying, oh, you're fragile, mm-hmm. right? We're mm-hmm. like, okay, this is your situation. Let's figure out ways for you to thrive in all different environments.
Your sensitivity can be your strength.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And that, throughout my life, I have tried to find ways to make that sensitivity a strength, even in the United States Marine Corps, even mm-hmm. in college, even in some really tough, daily news. I don't break easily, but I have learned ways to make that sensitivity and that attunement to things a strength, not a, I'm not going to snap easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned that over years of probably some very thoughtful teachers meeting me where I was at and helping mm-hmm. me get to the next stage.
I love that.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
All right. The philosophy of knowing your philosophy. Jackie, you did a piece on teaching philosophy because you're working with your students in the semester and they had to write their teaching philosophy. And I also remember just how much Gina said about her teaching philosophy, which I was blown away with, because how many people in their professions don't put that kind of thought into what is my teaching philosophy? What mm-hmm. is my, you know, my nursing philosophy? What, you know, what mm-hmm. is my journalism philosophy? And mm-hmm. I found that very inspiring. I think Teacher Talk often inspires people in other professions.
Mm. I hope so.
To take a cue from educators and say, oh, that's a good idea. We should do that in business as well.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for saying that. One of the things that I have hoped to communicate through Teacher Talk is to say we are doing things with a lot of intentionality yeah. and with a lot of purpose and with a lot of thought behind our actions. And the teaching philosophy assignment that I have my students do, and that is good practice among all educators, and every educator I know has a version of this in their bag of tricks, whether they update it annually or not. It's something that they have taken the time to do. And so it's really just a written document where you outline to yourself and then can share with others, this is why I do what I do, and this mm-hmm. is the research behind it and the purpose behind it. And I think what I've learned about having a teaching philosophy, or maybe especially early on when it wasn't as solid in my mind or solid on the paper, is that you need one so that when the day is hard mm-hmm. or when you bump up against something, you can look to your own like barometer. You know what I mean? And ask yourself, like, what am I going to do in this situation? What's my philosophical backing for what I'm about to do?
Yeah. Why am I doing this? Why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm on the right track. Yeah. Yeah. Gina, what does this bring up for you?
I already said it, and I think it's worth saying again. The cornerstone of my philosophy is I want to give kids more options and opportunities in their lives. And education does that. We open doors. We kick down doors for kids.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was going to do a nice long thing about the history of education at the U.S. Supreme Court, because I still think about that. And I was trying to get at something with that said, you know, you think – it can be frustrating when something becomes political, when mm-hmm. education becomes political, and you hear it come up in the state legislature or in the national, you know, news, and that can be frustrating. But that series of three-part pieces that you did, Gina, reminded me that because it's public school, mm-hmm. these things are always part of what we're discussing. Should I, you know, we're always mm-hmm. having, like democracy, we're always going to be having conversations mm-hmm. about what we want out of public school.
Yeah. For instance, Tinker versus Des Moines, not far from us,
mm-hmm.
Where it talked about how much free speech do kids have when right. they're in school. That is so pertinent still today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So when we see a legislation in Peer, which is talking about, you know, what do counselors have to report to parents if a student comes and tells a counselor something, and people are having this conversation. Yeah, we are talking about how a kid feels safe. We are talking about what's safe for children. We are acknowledging that they go into the classroom and encounter trusted adults. And what does that communicate? We're asking questions about what that communication between parents and teachers should be. Mm-hmm. And even if the debate gets a little ugly sometimes, the big idea of us talking about these things, I think, is still pretty important and impactful.
Mm-hmm. The idea that we would all agree feels more frightening to me
right.
than the continued disagreement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Wow.
You just blew Gina's mind.
Yes. It's so obvious, but it doesn't get said enough.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's not always comfortable. You know what I mean? I don't mm-hmm. love disagreement, but I think everyone silently agreeing is not the society that I want to live in. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I didn't write about that in the blog post that you can find at sdpb.org/teachertalk. What I said instead was, let's talk about teacher fashion, because
please. I love it.
And the reason why was also because it was fun. But also, when I think of Teacher Talk as a whole, if I was going to explain it to somebody else, I would say it is often playful mm-hmm. and delightful and celebratory and joyful and fun. Mm-hmm. So this was a post that I think Jackie wrote about teacher fashion and the different how it's evolved over the years. And then also how it can be kind of fun.
My joke / serious comment is that I got into teaching for the fashion, you know? But I just, what other profession are you like, I'm going to put on this really fun, you know, sweater that has a bunch of rulers on it or whatever, you know
right,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that just isn't really in your business job necessarily. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm speaking out of turn. I've never had a job like that.
The architects will call us. And we'll say, we have.
No, yeah. We've got our protractor.
Protractor shirt ties.
Yeah. I hope they do. That would give me so much joy. Yes. But I always loved Miss Frizzle growing up, and I just thought her outfits that were always on theme with what the lesson was is just like a spectacular icon. But yes, and then also the ways that fashion has evolved for teachers. You made a note of who was it?
My stepmother. Relative?
Your stepmother.
Yeah, my stepmother.
Pantyhose, high heels. I mean, thank
skirt,
goodness
yeah.
that's no longer required. My feet, I'm sure, would need to be sawed off by the end of the day. Yeah.
Hers have been sawed off and put back together. The toes. It's not good for you to wear heels every day for your entire career and be in front of a classroom.
No, it's not.
Absolutely not. I'm constantly walking around my room. We call it proximity. And I'm remaining in proximity to all my students. And I'm kneeling down beside their desks. And I would have so many runs in my pantyhose if I were wearing them.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I want to also just give credit to, especially this happens a lot in elementary schools where the teachers do wear the sweater with the rulers and and the sweater with the heart around Valentine's Day. One of my a TikTok follow I've been enjoying is Christiane Ersfeld. She's a fifth grade teacher at JFK Elementary.
Oh, fun.
And she just got over 2 million views on one of her TikToks because of, you know, just what she was wearing. She doesn't show any students, of course. It's just fun.
What and was she wearing?
She had on the shoes with the red bottoms.
Oh, well played.
Yes.
Well
and played. She put it, she did a cute thing to music. But my point here is both Christiane and I are about the same age and we have time to play with fashion now. But when we were all raising our kids and we had 120 kids, I had 120 kids at school and I had my kids at home and, you know, I did the best I could. Fashion wasn't the first thing on the priority list by any means. So to those teachers who are like, oh, who has the time, who has the money, your time will come. And then you get to be creative with how you dress. And
and it might not be your thing, and that's okay, too.
That's so
we had fun
okay.
with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me just how often teachers, which is also something I never really thought of. As a journalist, nobody's looking at you. Unless you're an anchor on, like, a broadcast, you know, television, and then everybody. And that's a whole different thing. But as a radio journalist, most people don't see me. As a teacher, like, you were in front of the class, and they're all looking at you.
Yes.
From the front, from the back, from the board, from when you kneel next to them, on top of your head, you know, like they're studying and they are observant.
Incredibly.
And so it occurred to me what kind of, not pressure, but opportunity that would be to demonstrate professionalism and compassion and creativity and, you know, togetherness to show that you care. All that can be communicated with clothes.
Absolutely.
You can't convince me that it's not.
Absolutely. And that, for me personally, I don't know about everyone else, but what I'm wearing does have an impact on my mood. It doesn't totally govern what my mood is, but it has a little impact. And if I'm feeling like I look good, I feel good.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And even if you don't think about fashion in the way that I clearly do as a educator, it's still, like you were saying, Laura, you do think about it because you think, what's happening today? How many stairs am I going to go up and down? How much movement am I going to? You have to think about, like, the logistics of what you're wearing, too. But I'm with you, Gina. I always taught better when I liked what I was wearing because I just felt more confident and comfortable.
Yeah. In journalism, often you're dressing to disappear, you know? How can you be the person that they did not notice? They forgot that you, you know, just they're being themselves. So depending on the situation, you're just trying to not be noteworthy.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And man, that was a transition for you, an easy transition from military to journalism then, because I think you want to disappear in
camouflage.
Both.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
I actually had a really hard time, side note, adjusting from the military uniform to the first job I had after college. Like, I got in my annual review was like, you're not dressing well enough. Like, I think within the first 2 weeks they had called me in and said, we gotta do something about your clothes.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, because I'd been, you know, 6 years you just put on the same uniform, and, you know, comfortable shoes, boots, you know, that's what. So I was trying to adjust, and apparently I was not hitting the fashion highs.
Wow, interesting.
And then what happened?
You know, also didn't have any money. You know, mm-hmm. I started the job and I had no money. So I was like, well, this is what I have. This is what I own. So this is what I'm wearing. But they wanted more, you know, suits and stuff. And I mean, I only worked there 2 years and I was like, no, this isn't for me. Mm-hmm. So I left that job. Mm-hmm.
Do you know educators who kind of built like a uniform or like a capsule wardrobe or that kind of idea of having a quote unquote uniform where they mm-hmm. wear their school polo and khaki pants and kind of the same shoes every day? Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. I feel like there are some teachers that kind of do that where they make their own uniform. But I'm pivoting hard because I'm feeling upset that you had this experience.
I didn't quite fit. Yeah. I was the orchid child who didn't fit in the corporate environment.
Yeah.
But then I found journalism where you can,
it was meant to be
not as important as how you look. It was a superficial job that I needed to leave. So it was a good indication I was on the wrong role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here found my way to public radio and to you.
Yes.
Thank you for inviting me to share a few of my takeaways.
Yeah. I hope the audience reads it, not just listens, but reads it because it's written beautifully.
It's an incredible piece of writing.
Oh. The writing teacher told me that what I wrote was written beautifully.
Oh, it really is so good. I gave it, for those of you who don't know, Lori sent it to us via our phones, and then I wrote back with the 100 emoji, like as if to grade it with a red pen,
yep.
as if you need a grade for me. That's
Which
hilarious.
Was another episode, the red pen.
The red pen. Yes, we did talk about that.
I have been crushed by the red pen if you told me to edit you.
I don't use red anymore.
No.
Green.
No, I'm as a purple.
Okay. All right. What are we going to do next? Are we going to talk about Finland next? Now that we've gone through 3 episodes of takeaways, we get to go to the next 80 episodes.
I love this.
And you have just returned from Finland, and maybe that's what we'll do in the future.
That sounds great. And then it also sounds like school buses are on the agenda
and school
now
buses.
Too.
And school buses.
And school buses. Mary, my school bus driver. I still remember her name, by the way. So
mine was Earl. Earl Beningen.
Mm-hmm. And Mary on the last day of school used to let us have a paper fight or a water fight.
Whoa.
A water fight?
On the bus, on the way home from the last day of school.
Oh, my goodness.
Mary.
This is ages ago, right?
God bless you.
Mary. I love Mary.
We had to all agree what it was going to be if we were going to have a paper fight or a water fight.
Can't do both. That's paper mache fight, and you're in trouble then. That's not good.
Right. See you guys next time.
Thanks, Lori.
That is our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. Go to our website if you want to read and find links to further research. It is at sdpb.org/teachertalk. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.